Welcome, everybody, to the First Name Basis podcast. This is where we talk with industry leaders and innovators about what's happening in the world and in our tech space. Today with me, I have Jenna Pilgrim, who is the CEO of The Right Network. He's been a friend of mine for a very long time and has been working side by side with us in the tribal scale offices. We did have offices in Toronto. Jenna, welcome to the pod.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Sheila, for having me.
Jenna, I know you really well. A lot of our listeners don't know who you are. I think I wanted to start off just by, you know, not dating you by age, but saying, how does someone so young get to where they are? And if you could walk us a little bit through your career, because I think it's really going to set the context for what we are seeing in the market right now, especially when it comes to crypto, NFTs, Web3. Would love to for you to just give us a little bit of background about yourself.
Sure. Yeah. So I got into crypto probably in, I guess, 2015. Yeah, 2015, which now feels like 100 years ago. I don't know how to do that.
I started this company in 2015.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, it's been a bit. I think it was a series of, I guess, I say I got really lucky, but I think, you know, it was a series of events that all sort of came together and shouldn't have happened, but did, and sort of I was in a position to take advantage of them. So my first job was as the chief of staff to Don Tapscott, who wrote Blockchain Revolution. So Blockchain Revolution, like, interviewed the sort of the top 200 or so people in the crypto space at the time, which was like 2015, 2016. So that's sort of how I met everybody. And then that put me on the map to build out what became eventually the Blockchain Research Institute, which was the first think tank in the crypto blockchain world. Back then it was like very all blockchain, no crypto. It was like very careful, like not Bitcoin. Yeah. Which is really funny now to like look at where the world is now. It's very like blocked or very like pro Bitcoin. Bitcoin is okay, but we don't know about all the other ones.
What changed? What do you think changed?
I think like the regulatory sphere became really clear about Bitcoin, that Bitcoin was not a security, that it was a commodity, and that it was very clearly defined versus all of the rest, which are still questionable. I mean, ETH got a little bit of a break too, but yeah, it was very interesting to be in that time where it was like, we want blockchain for a supply chain, and we want it within our companies, and we want it for all of these different reasons, but we don't want Bitcoin. Don't talk about Bitcoin at all. And then from there,
what was some of the learning? Again, I just want to pry into this a little bit. Like, you're in this blockchain institute. I'm guessing you're working with like large enterprises on how they could implement blockchain into like their workflows, how it can help them. And like, just give me the high level, like or the top ones that you think were like the best use cases, because you still see organizations, and especially the listeners of our pod, enterprises, our enterprise customers, if they're listening, you know, they're probably still wondering, scratching their head of like, how could blockchain help us?
Yeah, so we did a lot of research into different applications for like supply chain and for consumer goods. So our clients were like Procter & Gamble, ExxonMobil. They're using it a lot for asset tracking to say every single step along the way in our usually archaic supply chains that are built on very old technology. How can we use the blockchain to make sure that everybody's kind of looking at the same thing? They wanted to use and still probably want to use the blockchain almost like a shared spreadsheet.
Because people may be using different spreadsheets. I'm seeing inventory in different areas, and how can I just make sure everything has been verified on this network that, hey, what I'm looking at is actually right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think the thing that was lost, and I would argue still sort of is, there are a lot of people creating their own blockchains, their own sort of private networks, and that's really good for learning. That's really good for like figuring out where to go next and figuring out what the blockchain is all about and the idea of a shared system and shared consensus. But in the long term, if all of the people on your payroll are the only people on your blockchain, then it's not a blockchain anymore. It's just a shared database. And so moving from that into a more open source, more collaborative environment is really challenging, because they're using these ingrained systems that every single player in the blockchain or in the system might not really understand. They might not understand all of the specific consequences of their actions. So it was it was a fascinating time. Still is. It still is.
I'm sure it still is. I mean, for every vertical experimenting now we've kind of moved away from the term blockchain, but oh, we are going to be the Web3 in this particular vertical. And you and I were just in a couple different conferences where I was joking with you saying, hey, it seems like we're like leveraging technology to solve not really many solutions, but we'll get into that. But yeah, let's continue with a little bit about yourself and your career.
Yeah, so Blockchain Research Institute started in that really enterprise-y area, was, you know, consulting to Thomson Reuters, some big banks, and even some like big consultancy firms. A lot of them were first out of the gate, Accenture, IBM, KPMG, Deloitte. They were sort of right out in front. But then that's how I realized very fast that I did not want to be a consultant. And that at the end of the day, there's so much good research out there and there's so much good work being done. But if someone isn't taking that research and then figuring out how to actually disseminate it within an organization, then we're not going to get anywhere. And so there was a really big role for people to take that research or take what was found out and actually go and build something. Gotcha. And yeah, that's how. Hang around entrepreneurs long enough, you need to go be one or at least be around more of them. Sure. And so I joined Block, BLOQ. They developed infrastructure to make it easier for people to build on public blockchains. And they had a venture studio as well. So the venture studio work is the work I really liked. Right. It's like helping spin out a bunch of different companies. I think you guys actually had a venture studio at the same time. Yeah, Yeah, so you had launched it, I think, originally.
Around the same time.
Yeah. And that was my first experience of remote work, like fully remote work. That was a new one. And you know, spent a bunch of time traveling with Block, lived in Amsterdam for a while, lived in Singapore for a little bit, and sort of experienced the broader.
There's a bunch of companies doing what Block does now, right? Like there's a bunch of companies saying, hey, we're open blockchains, you go ahead and build your business models on top of it.
Yeah. There's a bunch that both, so Block Enterprise was doing something similar to what like Alchemy or Infura or Block Daemon, like that kind of enterprise mm-hmm. side was giving that infrastructure so that people could build. So that was very early to be building that kind of business.
Sure.
Yeah. And then from there, it's only a matter of time before you have to go build something for yourself. So I started building StreamEd with Michael Casey from CoinDesk. And it was an NFT company in 2018, which everyone thought NFTs were like, any VC we talked to, everyone thought NFTs were like 15 years away. They're like, right. Oh, that's cute. You're going to have NFTs in your ecosystem and you're going to blah, 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 blah. And then we did not get funded for like a really long time.
Right.
Yeah. And we raised.
Timing is everything sometimes. For sure.
We ended up raising just over $500,000 for that one. It was great. It was an application that desperately needed more infrastructure. And here we are building infrastructure for the same problem.
So what do you do now? Tell us about Rank. How is it different? What's going on?
Yeah. So we realized that there was a big gap in the market to turn physical licensing contracts, like the relationship between an NFT and its usage, to turn that into a smart contract. And so right now, when you buy an NFT, people started really asking what they were buying, and mm-hmm. they're buying digital certificate. Like that's it. It's a certificate of authenticity. It's not usage. It's not a contract that can be edited into the future. If I own an NFT, I can put it on my wall and I can privately display it in my home, and that's it. I can't put it on a t-shirt. I can't put it in my commercial. I can't, do any of those things unless it's accompanied by a usage contract. And so we do usage contracts. So we're a contract generator. Yeah.
So I guess the use case would be you see these memes of people joke around going, hey, you may like that song, but I own it. It gives you an opportunity now. Hey, if you actually do have ownership of it and you have the right usage contract, you can actually use that music in a variety of different ways.
Yeah, or I, as the creator of it, can make it really easy for somebody to reuse my media. Right now, the only recourse, and we can argue this if you'd like, but I don't think there's any enforcement in Web3. I don't think enforcement exists in Web3. And that is like the only recourse we've had for somebody infringing on copyright or infringing on media is takedowns. And there's no takedowns in Web3. That's kind of the point. Like, it's on the blockchain. That's kind of the point. And so if you're not allowed or able to take things down anymore, like, what do you do? Like, what do you do? You have to make it a lot easier to do the right thing rather than punishing someone for doing the wrong thing.
And I may be Web 2.0, but it takes me back to the Napster days where, like, Apple came in and said, hey, we're going to create an iTunes store. And, like, this Napster stuff or Kazaa or whatever it may have been is going to be around, but let's make it easier for you to actually distribute music the right way. And I'm a music guy, so I keep going back to music all the time as the analogy. Makes a lot of sense. I wanted to, before we continue on this NFT path, I think you and I have been in, it's June 28th, 2022 right now. And you and I just did two conferences back to back. First one was Consensus in Austin. And then we were at NFT Week in New York City. And while all this is going on, it seems like this huge momentum that the Web3 crypto blockchain world was having started crashing down. What are you seeing in the market? What's going on right now? And why is everyone scared out of their mind to, like, everybody who's bullish is so scared now. And like, and the markets are showing that. What's going on here? Break it down for us.
Spooked is definitely a really good, is a good, like, adjective that I would use. It's a weird time to be in crypto, first of all. In crypto, this is not our first rodeo. Like, you know, you and I have known each other for a long time. This is our third or fourth or more bear market for Bitcoin. And so I would say that the more financially focused people are very much like, I've seen this movie before. But unfortunately, the crashes that have happened in Celsius and Three Arrows Luna, Capital, and now, well, Luna was the first big shoe to drop, and then Celsius, and now we're experiencing the BlockFi FTX. We're not sure what's going to happen. I was talking to one of my friends at BlockFi yesterday, and we're not sure which deal they're going to take yet. But witnessing that, the Bitcoin crypto fintech people get more and more brave every bear market or every bull market cycle, right? But when you get more and more brave, you get more leverage, which also means you get a bigger crash. And they can stomach the bigger crash because they're accredited investors. They understand the risks, and they took the risk, and it fell this time. And that's fine. That doesn't mean it's not going to succeed next time. But I think the interesting part has been all of my, like, NFT Web3 friends who, this is their first bear market, and this is like a whole new concept. And it hurts less, because usually they crash less, but we've seen sort of in two pieces a divergence between the crypto people over here and the Web3 people going this way. Like the air of optimism, or maybe it was like confused delusion at NFT NYC, right? Sure. Like, everyone was still having these big parties. They were all still thrilled. They were all still
consensus was the same. These parties were massive, and I was like, who's paying for all this and what is going on?
It just smelled like sunk cost to me.
Yeah.
Like, we already paid for the party. Our whole team was already coming, and now we have to go and put on a good face and, like, you know, make everyone feel that we're all going to be fine. And we're still all bullish on the technology, but the interesting part for me, and I was talking to a journalist yesterday, is the divergence of Web3 and crypto. The fintech funds are getting a lot more specific about what they're investing in because they hurt more, but they are more bullish than they have ever been on, like, the long-term whatever of the technology. But the Web3 crowd isn't really sure what's going on. So. They're holding out a little bit.
I mean, you know, isn't this like most new industries that form? I think, you know, if we think back to the .com crash, For those of us who are old enough to remember that, like what happened in the dot-com crash was, you know, everything was so bullish on everything is going to be online. Not that that statement was wrong now that we're in 2022, but there are just business models that are going to fail. And that's just part of any new industry. You're going to have a bunch of business models, companies that aren't run right, companies that are technology for the sake of technology, companies that are, you know, not really figuring out how to go and attack the market that they're in, or the market's not ready for it. Timing is, like we talked about earlier, is not ready for them. And you have these organizations fizzle out. And I don't think it's going to stop the cream from rising to the top. I think you're still going to find organizations saying, hey, this is the right business model for us. Here is what we can go and do. And it makes a lot of sense for our organization. And that's just, you know, you got to fail fast, like I say all the time. You can figure that part out.
Yeah. Yeah. And having the good thing about a lot of these, especially Web3 companies, is that they all got funded last market cycle. So sure. A bear market is going to be really good for Web3 companies. Maybe not so much for fintechs because they manage a lot more money and, you know, there's more washout because they're being encouraged to take more risks. But yeah. The Web3 companies just need 8 months of silence to build whatever they want to build. And then we'll actually roll it out and, you know, we'll crawl back up again.
Gotcha. Gotcha. What are you like, which verticals are you most bullish on in the Web3 space? And maybe verticals are wrong thing, but like, what are some concepts that you're seeing that are coming out of Web3? Kind of like when you had your Blockchain Institute hat on before, that you really feel they're going to come and like start really changing the way we do things.
I love the idea of NFTs for access control. So at NFT NYC, we saw a little bit of this. I think bridging from the, you know, NFTs are weird fake art into like, I need an NFT to get into this thing, or I need an NFT to be able to access this cocktail party or to be able to access this new application. There was one and there, I'm almost like, I'm not ashamed to say this, but like I got duped isn't the right word. I wanted to go to this cocktail party. My friend's like, well, you need to own a floor NFT. It's like, you need to own a floor NFT. Floor NFT is an application that looks like a Blockfolio for NFTs. It'll pull in all the floor prices of the NFTs that you own. You log in with your MetaMask but the key is you have to log in with your MetaMask. And then it will check that you own a floor NFT before it will give you access to the application itself.
Gotcha.
And I was like, okay, cool. I needed this NFT to go to this cocktail party. Fine. I bought it. You probably could have got away without it, but, but I was like, you know what? I'll play the game. Sure. I'll play. And so I was talking to my friend who was like, told me to buy it. And he was like, I was like, well, what do I get? Like, besides, like, you know, I buy this NFT and I get to go to all of their stuff. What else do I get? He goes, you get the ability to log onto the App Store, download Test Flight, and then download Test Flight and then get into their app. And then you get access to their app. You're one of the first people to get access to their app. And then you are given the opportunity to give them product feedback. And I was like, are you serious?
All this just for that?
Well, but like, you know, as well as I do, how hard it is to get product testers.
And
these people,
I would not be paying someone else to like.
Yeah. I just paid $300 plus gas for the ability to test this new app. And I was like, that is the most genius thing I've ever heard of. So any person putting out a new product should launch an NFT collection. Just access cards. They created the right FOMO and it worked out. And I was like, man.
So you said a lot of steps there, and us who are in tech and us who are in the Web3 space completely get it. When does it become average that like my sister, who's a teacher and has no idea what a MetaMask is and never will probably care, actually be able to go and engage and start leveraging Web3 and, you know, even having access if she wanted to go to a particular cocktail party and you had to have the NFT to go or be part of that community. Like, when do we get past this, like, all these hurdles you got to go on? It reminds me of, like, you know, back in the day, if you didn't know how to log on to the internet through your modem, you were kind of screwed. Like, when does access become more for the masses?
When technologists finally realize that UI UX designers are just as much, if not more important than they are.
Right.
Like when you realize that.
So is that really it? It's just a problem of over engineering and being like,
it's too hard.
Other engineers like us are going to get it. Otherwise, forget it.
It's too hard, and there are not enough. There's lots of education. There's lots of videos, lots of YouTube videos that will teach you how to do it. But the process is still 10 steps long. And every single step along the way, there aren't enough protections in place. And as a person building a tech company, I don't necessarily want more protections right away, but there aren't enough things that will keep users safe. NFTs are not grandma safe yet. They are not, you know, my mom safe. They are they're not safe for the average person because depending on what blockchain you use, it's very expensive. And so you have to be okay to stomach that risk. And the user interface is confusing. And so that's another one.
Even the discovery is like I got to get part of this community. I got to jump in on Discord. I want to hear what they're doing. They're only giving me information at certain dates. It's like, I don't have time for it.
Well, yeah,
maybe that's set up in a way that to eliminate a person like me from being part of that community. And I totally get that.
That's the funny
part. That doesn't seem really open in Web3 to me.
No, that's what I mean. Is like, that's the funny part about Web3 is like they come out of the gate with the same, and crypto did the exact same thing. And crypto has now opened up a little bit more because there are better tools, there are better access tools. I think the important part is that crypto did the same thing. Web3 said Web3, this open thing, anyone can participate. It did lower the barriers to entry, where any person can log on to the Discord, but it's very hard to get from zero to, you know, I'm an NFT sniper and I get access to every single drop and all the rest of it. But if you're dropping a new NFT collection, you have to basically negotiate with the NFT mafia to get your NFT collection to sell out, which is totally contrary.
Explain that to me. How does that work?
So you have to create a very large community of people from around the world. And there are there's probably 1,000 or 1,500 NFT collectors in the world who have, this is like bloggers and YouTubers. And this is it's a very homegrown, like grassroots movement. Mm-hmm. But there is very much a pyramid, and there are people who are at the top of that who, if they show your project will sell out. And this is very difficult.
The influencers of the NFT community.
Yeah, exactly. And once you get into like the influencer marketing people come into here, and they bring in the influence that they have, but they don't have the same influence in Web3. It's very challenging to make your NFT project as successful as it is, which one could argue, what is the goal of a good NFT drop? It is to gain good users who are going to use your thing, and not necessarily just to sell out a 10,000 collection of, you know, some random picture that you made up. So I'm hoping that this bear market will wash out a lot of the like PFP generation, and, you know, some of your listeners might be angry at me for saying that, but I'm very excited to be in the post-monkey generation.
So the post-monkey generation, I like that. So what I'm hearing from you is like, you really are bullish on the projects that have more utility. It's more, not just art-based. It's, you know, people argue with me all the time, like, hey, why do I have an NFT collection? And I'm like, hey, why did I collect baseball cards and hockey cards and football cards when I was a kid? Now I just do it digitally, and like there's a community of other people who are also doing it digitally, and I totally get that. But now there's a whole, what I'm hearing from you is there's a whole like community-based aspect to it of like, what's going to be the utility of that NFT? How could you actually go use it? What else are you going to be able to go do with it?
Yeah, and I think there's a big thing in like we've seen some sports teams be really innovative here, like You have NFTs that evolve. So like generative NFTs where like, if you have an NFT that you hold for like the Warriors did this, where you have an NFT that you hold. And then if the Warriors win, your NFT changes and it's a different art now. And it's a different, like that would be like, you know, your baseball card is one picture, but then if the picture of the person, you know, if the person hits a grand slam, then the picture changes. Right. And because we have an NFT that's connected to its creator, we're able to facilitate that sort of change, which is very cool.
And you've gamified it. It's so super cool.
And being able to like gain, like gather VIP networks that already exist and then represent sort of their stake in it. So if you're a season ticket holder, I know like you're a season ticket holder in Miami. And so like, if you had an NFT that represented your season ticket, and then, you know, the Heat continues to do well, you get more artwork or you get more perks or you get more access to the team in different ways. If you do different things, there becomes a way to gamify, both fan interaction is a huge one. And ticketing is a bigger nut to crack, but fan engagement for existing VIP networks is one I'm really, really excited about.
Yeah. I mean, one of the ones that I'm extremely bullish on is this like idea of loyalty with NFT. It's like, hey, the longer I've held it, the more I've interacted maybe with the brand that released it or the company that released it, the more and more clout I get and the more importance I have to them. It's kind of like, you know, my Marriott rewards where I walk into a hotel and they're like, hey, welcome, let's upgrade you right away. Where like, hey, my NFT could be that clout now and be able to show, you know, be able to have that connection with that company or product or whatever it is, that, hey, I'm a super engaged user.
Yeah. And there's a really interesting piece there as far as like charities and conservation goes. So my friends, and I'll just a little show, my friends are launching this NFT drop called Eternals, okay. How you actually say it, but they've created a generative rainforest where 55% of the proceeds of these NFTs go to rainforest conservation. And they've actually like loaded in the data of what the weather is in the rainforest. And there are these cute little like spinning space trees. And, oh, hang on. Can you hear me still?
Yeah, I can hear you. Okay,
perfect. One of my AirPods died. So the cool part is that you have to keep donating to the rainforest to keep your forest plot alive. Otherwise, if you don't keep engaging with it or playing the game or doing something, then your little forest plot will die. And so you almost have to keep it alive like a Tamagotchi.
That's the word. I was like, my little sister used
to play. Tamagotchi. Yeah. Yeah. They were a thing when I was a child. I used to kill all my Tamagotchis, but we're, you know, going to try and keep my rainforest alive.
I used to play SimCity, I remember. And if I didn't watch my city, chaos would be breaking out.
Yes, exactly.
Very cool. Jenna, let's do some predictions. Where do you see Bitcoin and Ether going in like a year?
So this one is divergent again. It could go up to, I liked that someone said 100,000 by the end of the year. I would love that, but yeah. I don't think we're going to go there. I think we're in for probably like at least 6 months of bear market, likely more.
We're mid-year now.
Least the end of the year. But then usually Bitcoin goes down at the beginning of the year and then does a bunch of stuff in the middle and then goes up in September. It always has a hike in September. So I think we're probably in for it till the following September. So I think we're looking at probably 14, 16 months of this. And that's, it could climb back up depending on, because they're divergent predictions now, right? We have Web3 crowd delivering on things like DeFi and farming came through in the last bear market, was created in the last bear market, and yields and all the rest of it, which eventually got
kind of backfired. It kind of got it back into a bear market.
Yes, exactly. But like BlockFi as a company, Celsius as a company, they were all created in like the last 18 months and became these sort of rocket ships. So another one could come out of nowhere. I hope it's mine, but we'll see. Yeah.
And then how do you see institutional funding? I know we've seen a lot of VC funding in the past 2 years in this space, whether it be Web3 or NFT space. You've been fundraising, you've done a good job. Like, how do you see funding moving forward?
I'm finally done.
Entrepreneurs out there, congrats.
Finally, yeah, finally done fundraising, thank God. Just squeaked it in there right before everybody blew up. Yeah. I think it's going to be another 12 to 18 months before companies can fundraise again. But that really says, like, you know, I think it brought especially valuations down to a more pragmatic level, that made it a lot easier for investors to invest. People were slashing valuations. They were doing creative ways of fundraising. I think we'll see more companies doing NFT drops to fund their company, which is cool because that gives you community engagement as well. It means that you get metrics and traction before you have product, or even before you have product market fit sometimes.
Anything's better than a deck saying, yeah, I got a $75 million valuation off this deck.
Yes, exactly. Anything's better
than a deck. Maybe I'm old school, but I think you're crazy when you got that.
yeah. Especially with valuations that high. So you're like, proven team, and you're like, proven what?
Yeah. Proven team. I've seen that without even white papers, though. I don't even want to get started.
Yeah.
There's a Wild West out there for a bit.
Yeah, it'll wash out a lot of the tourists, which I like, and it'll force companies that have raised a lot of money to do something with it, and I think that's great.
Well, it's kind of like how the crypto world got created, right? It was all created without VCs. It was like, hey, we're going to have a community, and we're going to start supporting each other and build it up, and now
we'll create our own token, and our tokens will do this, and exactly.
So now some of that institutional funds goes away.
What do you think is going to happen?
Honestly, I'm too stupid to know. I'm too stupid to make a prediction. What I will do is keep my thumb on the pulse and navigate through it as obstacles come.
Yeah.
I do see a ton. I think, you know, and I joked around that consensus with you about this, but like, I don't want to hear another pitch of just more technology for the sake of technology.
No.
I think we're going to stop seeing a lot more of that, and people are going to have to come to the table with like, hey, this is technology to solve a real problem, or a problem that's not already being solved in a much easier way. So I think once that stuff starts getting fizzled out, I think you're going to see a lot of institutional money coming back to the table. Like right now, you know, I see things getting funded, and it's not, it's tough for someone like me who doesn't have a large due diligence team to say, hey, let me go in and jump in on something without someone else doing the due diligence. And so I think as we start to fizzle a lot of these cool tech ideas away from real business opportunities, I think, you know, you're going to see a lot more funding coming back in.
Yeah. So I'd like to see a lot more Web3 crypto companies reaching out to enterprises and saying, hey, let's build something together. Let's not just, like, Web3 companies have the ability to run really, really fast, but it's very likely that they might be running really fast in the wrong direction. And I think, like, there is something to be learned from, you know, the, like, you've seen, I mean, Time Magazine is a perfect example. They are huge innovators in the Web3 space, but how are they taking a, like, you know, more than 100-year-old corporation and like turning it into this innovative monster?
Absolutely.
And that's awesome. And we need to see more leadership like that, but it needs to come from a convergence of the two. And I hope that this bear market cycle will get a bunch more people to come to the table.
That's why I'm so excited to have you on this podcast, because it's something I want our enterprise leaders to listen to and say, hey, you know, like, there's a lot of cool stuff happening. How could you plug in and really leverage your business objectives with these cool companies that are coming out? And I think that, like you said, there's got to be the right convergence for it to really take off, and then make a big splash for the common person who is not so deep into tech to actually
gain
the advantages of it.
Yeah. Big enterprises know their users inside and out, and they know their customers. And I would argue that lots of people who are building big communities, they want big communities for the sake of big communities. They want 50,000, they say it takes a community of 50,000 to sell out a drop of 10,000. But why is selling out the drop the end game? Like, why is that the goal? What do you do after that? And how do you convert that person again and again? How do you sell to them again and again? How do you get the right data? There's a bunch of sort of Web3 data analytics companies that are coming out now, which I'm very excited about.
Absolutely. That space is very, very cool right now. especially in the analytics world. I want to shift gear a little bit. So you are moving closer to me. Is that happening? Not happening?
Yes, it is. It is.
So you're coming to Miami?
I am moving to Miami this fall. I'm originally from Toronto. We've met in Toronto. We've lived in Toronto for a while. I'm moving south of the border. I'm an East Coast person, definitely. And my choices were New York or Miami. And, you know, Miami is a bit warmer.
Why move out of Toronto?
I have many theories.
Canadian feelings right now. I've been pretty open about like what's.
Yeah.
Not that Toronto's not going to be home, and we're not going to support the community all the time, but like, be a little honest. Like, why are you coming down here?
I think the pandemic killed Canadian competitiveness. I think innovators like you and I are, you know, we need to be given the space and funding and access and whatever you want to call it. We need to be given that opportunity to build something really big. And if we're going to take risks like that, we need to know that the talent is there and the talent is excited. And you gave me a bit of advice, like probably a couple of years ago. And you're like, I don't really care what somebody's, especially for entry level employees. You're like, I don't care what their previous skills are, but they need to be smart and they need to be hungry.
Yeah.
And Canadian talent is smart. They've always been smart and they will continue to be smart. But when you have excessive government involvement, like we did, that didn't stop soon enough, you get a population that becomes very comfortable and very accustomed to being mediocre. And when you incentivize mediocrity, you incentivize this mediocrity over competitiveness, you're not rewarding big companies for being really successful or for building really innovative things. You're just taxing them more or telling them that they need to allow their employees to do all kinds of things that they couldn't before. We're not allowing entrepreneurs to make their own decisions. And I wish that Canada was a place and Toronto was a place, because like, it was like the heyday of Toronto tech. We loved working in Toronto.
Yeah, I'm positive it's going to come back. It just needs that restart, right? I haven't gone back to Toronto in a while, and it's literally because the airport's a disaster. I don't want to fly.
I get so sad that everyone is just so fine with being fine. Why can't we be great?
Be amazing. That's it. So, What did you notice here about the Miami tech community that really like started driving you towards it? We've talked a little bit about the flip side, but I think there's some magic happening here, and I don't want to like poison your answer here, but like, I'd love to hear what you saw happening in this community and share with us what you're seeing.
Yeah. So I spent probably like three, four months in Miami this winter. And I think, so like just the caliber of people that live there that you're surrounding yourself with, there's a lot of people from all over. Toronto is a very immigrant friendly city. It brings people from all over. There are more languages spoken in Toronto than in almost any city in the world, I think. And Miami, I'm feeling something really similar, where there are people from all over the world who come to Miami to build whatever their dream is. And it doesn't necessarily matter what your dream is, as long as it's something really big. And it basically is like, you have all these people around you who are running as fast as they can. It's the same thing that I love about New York. It just has this like,
New York has that pulse. It's like,
yeah.
You wake up at 7:30 in the morning, there's cabs honking. You're like, I gotta go.
Yeah. Or you're like, you're sitting on the subway or you're like, you know, walking down the street in Brickell or wherever. Mm-hmm. You're walking down the street and you, all the people, you look to your left, you look to your right, and you know that every person around you is also sprinting as fast as they can towards whatever massive thing they're trying to do. And you can't help but also sprint very fast. Otherwise you'll get left behind. Right. It won't necessarily happen, but like, it's a very exciting, energetic.
You feed off the energy of all the other tech enthusiasts that have moved over here during the pandemic, for sure.
And if we're like 10% as right as we actually think we are, then we'll actually still be somewhere really awesome. So I think it's that lowest common denominator.
Very cool. Yeah. Jenna, we're coming to the top of the hour. What do you want to sign off with? What's something that you want to talk to our listeners about, teach your listeners about, before we sign off?
I think, yeah, just give NFTs a chance. They are more than your average monkey picture. Anyway, all due respect to the monkey picture. Sure. But I think there's a lot more here. We've never been able to have like digitally unique things before, and we have that now.
Is there a low entry NFT that you would recommend somebody who's never gotten into it go into without having to try to buy a $100,000 monkey?
Any of them. Go mint your own. That will help you learn the most. Go to OpenSea, get a wallet, mint your own. It's very easy to do. Take a selfie and then make it into an NFT. You'll always learn more by doing. Just like in early days of Bitcoin, we said, go on Coinbase and go buy something. You always learn more from, spending, like, I don't know, if you're just minting one of yourself, it'll cost you less than $100, like less, probably less, significantly less, to mint an NFT of something. And that will teach you about all of the different pieces of it, teach you about scarcity and about, uniqueness. And that has applications across every sector, not just art and not just community management and all the rest of it. So, and keep a lookout for Wright. We'll be at MVP in the fall sometime. So I'll make sure to send you all the details about that.
Yeah, send me the details. I'll have to push it out on our newsletter and obviously I'm going to catch up with you in Miami and hopefully be part of this journey that you're about to take.
Yeah, sounds great. Thank you so much, Tito, for having me.
Awesome, Jenna. Thanks to our listeners. This is First Name Basis Podcast. You can find it on Spotify, Google Podcasts, YouTube. If I missed any, they're all over the place. But thanks, Jenna, for joining us. Take care.
Thank you.